Well, it has been a while, hasn't it? I know everyone says it, but time has this really strange way of flowing when you're an adult. I guess I'm at that age where I'm in between being a kid and being old. Or maybe that's your entire life. In between things. It's summer now, which means that we're dealing with a massive influx of people in the parks. We're an incredibly popular camping destination because of our large amount of campsites on various scenic areas. And in the summer season, there are camps that are almost always operating at almost to full capacity at any given time. Now, we're well-staffed, and we all know what to look for, what to expect. We have teams standing by in the event of any kind of emergency. Even so, people still manage to slip away. In response to a couple of other incidents at the same site, we installed a camper near the entrance, and a ranger stays out there every night. We rotate so everyone spends one night a week there. I chose Wednesdays, as these tend to be relatively low-key, with only our long-term guys around. This particular day had been humid, like the inside of a locked car. All of us were relatively miserable, but the camper had a small AC unit, and the campers and I took turns sitting in it until the sun went down. We all bedded down, and had the AC turned up as high as it would go. It was a loud unit. I had earplugs in. The camper is tiny but comfortable, and I fell asleep relatively quickly. I woke up in total silence, and it took me a minute to realize that there was a problem. The AC had stopped. There was absolutely no sound outside. I sat up, and the sheets didn't make any noise. A clap. Nothing. A yell. Nothing. Now, this has happened to me before. I'm a firm believer that it's some kind of strange acoustical phenomena, but I don't think it's caused by the wind. I got out of bed, and I yanked on my boots, and I flew out the door, and I ran to the edge of the campsite about 500 feet away, and somewhere between the trees, there was something darker than the space around it. I headed for it, but I must have been misjudging its distance, because it took longer to get there than it should have. It split a tree in half. I've seen lightning do that a few times, but not this cleanly. The cut was surgical. The bushes underneath it had been crushed. And I could faintly make out the shape of something furry. A raccoon, I suspect. The intestines, bursting out of its eye sockets, were already attracting flies. The stairs were concrete. I could make out the lines of graffiti on the lower steps. A metal handrail bowed low, haphazardly. Most of the supports bent or gone. 10, maybe 12 steps. In a rush, the sound of the world came back, and I heard the faint electrical snap of a fly exploding near my ear. I sprinted back to camp. I grabbed the rifle out of the pickup that I'd taken onto the site, and I stood at the edge of camp, my back to the woods. I stood there, and I watched until the sun came up. I watched the whole camp, every tent. I know I never fell asleep, and no one came into or out of the campsite, so I really don't know how the woman got away. Her tent was in my direct line of sight. As best I can guess, she must have gotten out when I was turned away for a second. We're hopeful that she's still alive, of course, but we'll have to close that part of the park for a while. Officially, we'll be keeping an eye on things, but I wouldn't take much comfort in that. We're keeping an eye on a lot of things. I'm on call 24 hours a day now. See, it's not the greatest thing in the world, but it pays the bills. And sometimes they let me leave early or take on an extra day off if I'm too tired. There's not that much going on at night, of course, but occasionally, one of us has to run out and deal with something. An animal sighting, a missing person, drunk people shooting each other, that sort of thing. All in all, I get called out about a dozen times a month for some kind of nighttime emergency. But generally, the calls go on something like this. A text and a phone call from my boss. 15 minutes to get out the door dressed in my uniform. 30 to work, then anywhere from 5 minutes to 8 hours dealing with the issue. If it's a missing person or the cops are involved, up to 2 days without sleep. The worst was a murder-suicide. That took a week. But by the end of it, I was in the hospital with severe fatigue and dehydration. Now, my boss knows that I'll pick up as soon as he calls, but I don't always hear texts. Usually he'll text first in case I'm up, but otherwise, he'll get me on the phone. He's the only one who contacts me in this situation. That's always been our system in the past. So you can imagine my surprise when I got a call from him at 2 in the morning and saw that I had 70. That's 7-0 missed texts. From just about every single person in our department. Yeah, what's up? I said, sitting up. I'm great at faking being awake on the phone.
Fleetwood Trail, south entrance. It's bad. Don't worry about getting your clothes. Just get up there.
He was breathing heavy, and he didn't want for me to finish my greeting.
Yeah? I mean, what's up?
I was concerned now. My boss is unflappable.
Just get out there. It's bad.
Of course, I immediately thought of the murder-suicide. You see, it took us days to find all the pieces of their skulls. How bad?
KD is on her way. Call when you figured it out.
He hung up. He'd never sent another ranger up before me. I scrolled through the barrage of text messages. Oh my god, Russ, what the hell's going on? Dude, what the fuck? I'm sorry. What's going on out there? Call me. Call the boss right now. I threw my clothes on and was out the door within 5 minutes.
The drive took about 15 minutes going 90 up the freeway, and along the way my phone kept pinging notifications. I turned it off and tossed it in the back seat.
When I got there, KD was waiting for me. Something about her face was wrong, and in the non-existent light I had to get close to see her. To see that she was wearing a respirator. The smell was like a wall. I ran into it about 5 feet from her and gagged. I took the respirator that she handed me and I strapped it on, coughing and doubling over. Bad, huh? She quipped, her voice muffled. She patted me on the back. Come on. I followed her into the forest, and even behind the filters I could still smell it. But believe me, it bothers me as much as it does anyone else when people say that something is indescribable, but I don't know how to paint an accurate picture of what it was like. Imagine taking a fish, filling it full of other dead fish, put that stuffed fish in a bag made out of the skin of even more dead fish, and leave that bag sitting in the sun for a few days. Sprinkle some halitosis and rotting grass on top of the bag, let it sit another few days. Now open the bag and stick your head in and take a nice big breath. That should give you an idea of what it was like from half a mile away. It was hard to be heard through the respirators, so we didn't talk much while we walked. Neither of us really wanted our mouths open anyway. I kept thinking about how smells are composed of particulate, and a few times I had to stop and lift the respirator to spit and dry heave. KD clapped me on the back, almost knocking me off balance, sending my spit flying.
It's gross, huh?
She said, half shouting.
Now don't worry, it's only worse from here.
I gave her a weak thumbs up. We kept going. She'd taken the van with our on-site equipment inside. She'd been there long enough to cart a couple of those portable spotlights to the scene. As we crested a hill, I could see them shining on something. Something huge. The top of the thing crested out of the trees in places. A huge, gray behemoth. I shot her a look, but she just grinned and waved me ahead. The smell was thick enough now to almost be visible. Something crunched under my feet. The robin I'd crushed was still alive, and it raised one wing weakly. I crushed its skull and moved on, but there were others. They remained where they'd fallen, their sides heaving and an occasional wing raised and dropping.
The smell got him, I think, Katie said,
picking a bird off the path.
There's a raccoon up here, too. Took one bite and died. It's hilarious. Come look.
I stepped across the birds, and the light filtered through the trees, shining on their little oil drop eyes. The path straightened up ahead, and I could see that the hulking thing, whatever it was, had fallen right across it, about 300 yards ahead. I broke into a jog, and KD kept pace. I went as close as I could until the smell was too much, and then I just stood while KD kept going. She kicked the thing and spread her arms out, taking it all in. The way she'd illuminated it, only part was really visible. It rose up, an impenetrable wall disappeared into the tops of the trees. The sporadic but careful lighting gave it an almost reverent quality, like an artifact on display. Either way I looked, the thing stretched into the dark. KD walked the length of it to my right until I could barely make her out in the dark. I craned my head up and could see the edge, where it curved and dipped back down. I forced myself closer to the rubbery surface of the thing. It was gray, darker in the light. And the surface was scarred and stippled with white marks. Katie came back and walked down to the left.
Come here, she said.
I followed, not taking my eyes off the thing. We walked, kept walking. Her hand sometimes brushing the thing, and up ahead now I could see something sticking out of the side of the wall.
Know what it is now?
I could hear that she was grinning, enjoying the mystery. It was some kind of thick flap. Huge. Bigger than both of us combined, one side was attached to the thing. It hung into the ground where it rested in the dirt. At the place where the flap joined the wall, there was a strange protrusion. Ignoring the smell, I now looked closer. There were many of them, in various sizes, small, grainy craters. That's when the pieces fit together, and I backed off. Stumbling over myself, falling into the dirt, Katie lifted the pectoral flipper with great effort.
You imagine how strong they have to be to move these things? I wish it still had its tail.
I ran forward. I kept going until above my head I could see something reflecting the light. Just barely. Something liquid and glassy, just beginning to fog with bacteria and decay. The mouth was slightly open. The algae in the baleen was beginning to rot. Suddenly there was a loud wheezing exhale and the thing moved just slightly. The mouth opened, showing more of the slimy, putrid baleen. And from somewhere far down the other side, there was a creak and a thud. Something I felt rather than heard.
Holy shit. Thought it was dead an hour ago. You feel that? Still trying.
The milky eye moved to look at me. And there was another, weaker exhale as we stared at each other. The whale opened its mouth a little more and closed it. And died. The light left the blind eye. The entire corpse sagged, letting off more of that horrific stench. KD was still talking.
That's another of those clean cuts, right through the whole back of it. If you just go around the other side, it's missing that fin and a big slice of its skin, but the tail's totally gone.
Couldn't break away. Couldn't stop looking into the cataract that was forming. All the bacteria now free to multiply and turn everything to liquid. Through the baleen, I could make out the bulk of the tongue. It was almost losing color, already being eaten from the inside, and I ran as far as I could, before doubling over and vomiting. KD came over, patted my back. When it was over, I wiped my mouth, I put the respirator back on. Now I went back to the corpse and began walking the length of it, shutting off every light. I couldn't stand to see it lit so beautifully.
I honestly don't know who to call, Katie said.
Down at the other end, I could see the clean slice where the tail had been taken off. No boat propeller could have done it. That was no surprise. I knew what had. I wondered how big they'd been. Down there in the deepest dark, where only whales could go. It answered a theory that I had for some time. The stairs were impartial. So deep down in my gut, there was a glassy obsidian panic that was so familiar now as to be unnoticeable, except when more weight was added. Suddenly, more than anything, I wanted to be back at home in the dark. I told KD who to call, what to do, so that I could hand her my respirator and begin to walk back to my truck. Never looking back at the corpse cresting the trees, the top of it growing its own forest of birds. Feasting. We'll leave it to rot. We'll say a water spout sucked up fish from one of the lakes and dumped them out there. And when the bones are the only thing left, we'll dispose of them and the trail will reopen. I drove back home. And I went to bed.